Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
The African militant group Boko Haram is increasingly using children to carry out suicide bombings. The United Nations says 44 children were involved in Boko Haram suicide attacks last year. Only 4 children were used in such attacks in 2014. The information comes from the UN Children's Emergency Fund, known as UNICEF. A UNICEF report said that 20% of Boko Haram suicide bombers were children. The youngest was thought to be 8 years old. The militant group has sent children to carry out attacks in crowded markets and religious centers. The children sometimes do not know they are carrying explosives. The boys and girls are rarely considered a threat by police or security forces. Over the past 2 years, UNICEF said, Cameroon alone has recorded 21 suicide attacks involving children. Nigeria has 17 such attacks, while Chad has 2. The report was released on the 2nd anniversary of Boko Haram's kidnapping of 276 girls from Chibok in northern Nigeria. Among those, 219 are still missing. Women and girls freed from Boko Haram say the militants used them as sex slaves or forced them to assist in the group's operations. Boko Haram's 7-year campaign of violence has killed 20,000 people and displaced more than 2 million others. The group set out to establish its version of Islamic law in northern Nigeria. That has included launching war on Western education. Human Rights Watch reported Tuesday that Boko Haram has killed 611 teachers since 2009. Attacks have destroyed or led to the closure of over 2,000 schools. Next, South Korea recently announced the defection of a North Korean military officer soon after the defection of 13 restaurant workers. Mario Ritter has more.
South Korea says a high-ranking North Korean military officer defected to South Korea last year. South Korea's Defense and Unification Ministries made the announcement Monday in Seoul. The Unification Ministry deals with issues between the rival Koreas. That includes bringing families together from both sides. The unidentified officer is a colonel in North Korea's military. He worked in North Korea's General Reconnaissance Bureau and is said to be the highest-ranking officer to defect from the North. The Bureau conducts spying activities against South Korea, including cyber attacks. The agency also is blamed for the 2010 torpedo attack against a South Korean naval ship. 46 sailors were killed in that attack. North Korea denies it carried out the attack. The announcement Monday comes days after South Korean officials said that 13 North Koreans recently arrived in the South. They say the North Koreans were working at a state-owned restaurant in a foreign country and defected as a group. That would make it the largest group defection since 2011. In a separate incident, a North Korean diplomat stationed in an African country defected with his family to the South last year. More than 29,000 North Koreans have defected to the South since the end of hostilities in the Korean War. The numbers have declined since Kim Jong-un took over as leader in 2011. I'm Mario Ritter.
President Barack Obama spoke recently about the best and worst days of his presidency. Bruce Alpert has the story.
Ousting Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi without a strategy for what followed was his worst mistake, says President Barack Obama. In 2011, NATO-led forces ousted the Libyan dictator. After that, Libya fell into chaos and turmoil. Obama said his administration failed to plan for the day after Gaddafi was ousted. However, he said, taking action in Libya to protect civilians from Gaddafi's forces was the right thing to do. Gaddafi was captured and killed months after the United States and European nations began air attacks. The country was left in chaos. Militias took control, and two competing parliaments and governments were formed. Libya became a place migrants used to get to Europe. This helped worsen Europe's immigration crisis. A unity government, supported by the United Nations, is in the capital, Tripoli, but neither of the country's two competing parliaments has announced support for a peace agreement. Obama said Libya is now a mess. On Monday, Obama's spokesman, Josh Earnest, noted that in a speech in September 2015 to the UN General Assembly, Obama said our coalition could have and should have done much more to fill a vacuum left behind. Earnest said the president believes the United States and other nations have not given Libya the help it needs to become stable. The president asked about what situation will prevail and what sort of commitments from the international community will be required after military action has been ordered by the president, Earnest told reporters. Obama said his greatest accomplishment during his more than 7 years in office was saving the economy from collapsing. The 2008 and 2009 economic recession was the worst in the United States since the 1930s. Millions of people lost their jobs and were unable to pay their home loans. Since then, the economy has improved and the jobless rate is much lower. Obama said the best day of his presidency was in 2010, when Congress approved national health care reforms that came to be called Obamacare. The program has given health insurance to millions of people who did not have it. Obama said the worst day of his presidency was in late 2012, when he visited the small town of Newtown, Connecticut, 2 days after a gunman killed 20 students and 6 teachers at an elementary school. Obama leaves office in January. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Some researchers say the more they learn about the Zika virus, the more worried they are about its long-term effects. Ana Mateo tells us more.
Top health officials in the U.S. say the Zika virus is scarier than first thought. The Zika virus is transmitted by mosquitoes. It can cause birth defects, such as an abnormally small head, a condition called microcephaly. Dr. Anne Schuchat is Principal Deputy Director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. Dr. Anthony Fauci is with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. They both spoke at the White House this week. From the White House, Schuchat warns that the U.S. needs to be ready. Schuchat and Fauci said there are other health problems linked to Zika, not just microcephaly. Those health problems may include Guillain-Barré syndrome, which paralyzes. Also, patients have shown brain inflammation that looks like multiple sclerosis. Schuchat said there are other troubling developments.
And most of what we're learning is not reassuring. We have learned that the virus is linked to a broader set of complications in pregnancy, not just the microcephaly, but also prematurity, eye problems, and some other conditions. We've also learned that the virus is likely to be a problem at much of the pregnancy period, not just probably the first trimester, but potentially throughout the pregnancy.
Officials say they are worried about the spread of the disease. They say hundreds of thousands could become infected in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. They have asked Congress for $1.9 billion to fight the virus. Fauci said if Congress does not act, health workers will not be able to stop Zika from spreading. Fauci said, "We really don't have what we need." Fauci said health officials are fighting the virus with money borrowed from other funds. Last week, the Obama administration said it was directing $589 million to fight Zika. The money had been set to fight Ebola, but is now going to Zika. Obama administration officials have warned that without more money to fight Zika, infection might increase. Officials say there will be delays in controlling and monitoring mosquitoes and in testing and developing a vaccine. There are at least 672 confirmed cases of Zika in the United States. These include 64 pregnant women. One Zika-related case of microcephaly was confirmed in the island state of Hawaii. Health officials say in the United States, the virus has been reported mostly in Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and American Samoa. But they say they believe it will spread in the continental United States in the coming months. Schuchat said she does not expect there will be large numbers of infections in the 48 states between Canada and Mexico. But she is not certain. At the recent press conference at the White House, Schuchat said that the mosquito spreading Zika is found in more U.S. states than first thought. About 40 million people travel yearly between the continental U.S. and countries with Zika. The Obama administration says that as of last week, 33 countries and territories in the Americas reported active cases of Zika. In Puerto Rico, 31 health workers from the Centers for Disease Control are working. A center used to fight dengue fever is now fighting Zika. That includes controlling and monitoring mosquitoes and educating pregnant women about avoiding infection. Schuchat said that about 5,000 packages have been given out in Puerto Rico. The packages include chemicals to repel mosquitoes, information on how to protect against infection, condoms, and vouchers to buy screens to keep mosquitoes from entering the home. I'm Ana Mateo.
Taiwan is accusing China of wrongly taking 8 Taiwanese citizens who were deported from Kenya. Reports say a Kenyan court found 37 suspects, including 23 Taiwanese, not guilty of cybercrime charges last week. The defendants were given 21 days to leave the country. Taiwan's foreign ministry says China pressured Kenyan police to put 8 of the Taiwanese on a Chinese airplane traveling to China on Friday. Kenyan officials said they were pressured by mainland China. Taiwan's foreign ministry demanded an immediate return of the 8 people. It called their deportation a serious violation of basic human rights. Taiwan had sent officials to Kenya to deal with the case. The self-ruling island's foreign ministry has no office in Kenya. The foreign ministry said a court order should have kept the 8 Taiwanese nationals in Kenya. However, the foreign ministry said Chinese officials obstructed its efforts. It said Chinese officials delayed the court order and prevented Taiwan's representative from reaching the acquitted people. The ministry said by the time Taiwanese officials arrived at the airport, the 8 Taiwanese citizens had been taken to a passenger plane of China Southern Airlines and sent to the mainland. The deputy minister of Taiwan's Mainland Affairs Council, Shi Wenfei, said, "This has not only harmed the fundamental human rights of the 8, but has hurt Taiwan people's feelings and severe negative impact on ties between the two sides." Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kong was asked about the incident during a news briefing Monday. He said he needed to further understand the situation. China considers Taiwan its own province. Nationalist Party forces fled to the island in 1949 after China's civil war with the Communist Party, which controls the mainland. I'm Ann Ball.
This is What's Trending Today. Tuesday was National Equal Pay Day in the United States. The day is designed to bring attention to wage differences between American men and women. The U.S. Census Bureau reported that in 2014, women were paid 79 cents for every $1 that men earned. Equal Pay Day marks how far into the calendar year women must work to earn pay that men earned last year. The Census Bureau reported that the average salary for an American woman with a full-time job is $39,621. In comparison, the average salary for a man who works full-time is $50,383. On social media, the hashtag Equal Pay Day trended worldwide. President Barack Obama gave an Equal Pay Day speech on Tuesday. He said that the pay gap between men and women offends our values as Americans. Obama also noted the pay differences in the world of professional soccer. Last month, members of the U.S. women's national soccer team brought a wage discrimination case to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The difference in pay is sizable. Each player on the men's national team earns $263,320 a year if the team wins 20 friendly matches. Each player on the women's national team earns $99,000 a year if the team wins those 20 matches. The U.S. women's national soccer team has won 3 World Cup championships. The U.S. men's national soccer team has never won a World Cup title. One Twitter user joked, "I don't support equal pay in U.S. soccer. Our women's team won the World Cup 3 times, so they should be getting lots more than the men." Naturally, some jobs require equal pay for men and women. Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton posted a video on Twitter Tuesday of a young girl asking her, "Do you think when you're president, you'll be paid as much as if it were a man?" Clinton's answer? "This is one of the jobs where they have to pay you the same. But there are so many examples where that doesn't happen." And that's What's Trending Today.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report.
Teachers of English may hesitate to teach debate because they think it is beyond their students' language ability or proficiency. But debate can be a powerful tool. It can help students learn to speak naturally and to listen carefully. Professor Charles LeBeau teaches English and debate in Japan. He wrote Discover Debate with Michael Lubetsky. The book helps English teachers and learners understand how to carry on a simple debate. The Discover Debate approach has 3 stages: creating a visual aid to communicate an argument, presenting the argument, and answering the other team's argument. Each stage puts increasing demands on language ability. It begins with a pre-debate experience.
When teaching debate to English learners, Mr. LeBeau recommends beginning with controlled practice. Students work in pairs to practice saying opinions and giving reasons in short conversations. They learn to identify opinions and arguments about everyday topics, such as sports stars, foods, weather, and habits. This controlled practice gives students the basic language skills they need to carry on a debate. Teachers may be tempted to give students serious topics, such as people should stop using nuclear power. However, Mr. LeBeau cautions that English learners may not have the necessary language ability to handle such topics. More serious topics often require special vocabulary and research.
When I'm introducing specific skills, step by step, I want to use a really simple, fun topic so they already can understand the content. The content is not part of the challenge. Vocabulary is not part of the challenge. It's something that they're very, very familiar with, so we can focus on the skills. So the topics for introducing the skills can be really, really simple, really fun. Like, for example, cats make better pets than dogs.
Mr. LeBeau's classes in Japan are like many in universities. They have 40 to 50 students. He has students form debate teams of 3 or 6, depending on the total number of students. Each team creates a visual aid to show their thinking on the topic. In last week's article, we explained the visual aid. The visual is a house. A roof represents an opinion, pillars are the reasons supporting the opinion, and the foundation is the evidence. Mr. LeBeau says creating the visual aid is not a verbal skill. It is a thinking skill. Language proficiency, he says, is not really required. In the next stage, students present their argument. They have to do some talking, but not too much.
They point to the visual, to the house. This is our opinion. The opinion is on the house. And these are our reasons, and the reasons are on the house. Let me explain each reason. The visual can do a lot of the talking for the team, for the student.
The third stage is answering the opposing team's argument. Here, debaters need a higher level of language ability. Mr. LeBeau recommends pausing for the opposing team to develop their answers, or refutations. Each team might go to a different area and discuss the weak points in the opposing argument. Students must first think about the arguments carefully. In Discover Debate, Michael Lubetsky and Charles LeBeau include a guide to help students evaluate arguments. The evaluation also takes advantage of the visual aid of a house. Students are asked to look for building flaws or problems. They identify things that are either not true or not important.
Students can write easily remembered abbreviations and simple statements on their opponents' houses. NT for not true, NAT for not always true, or NNT for not necessarily true. For true statements they feel are not important, they can also write, "It's not relevant," "It's not significant," or "It's easy to solve." These simple expressions make it easier for students to refute their opponents' arguments.
Cats are cheaper than dogs. Maybe they're only a couple dollars cheaper, so it's not really significant. And it's easy to solve. Cats are cleaner than dogs. Well, yes, in general, that's true, but it's easy to solve. Give your dog a bath. They can draw these on the house, and what it does is it takes away some of the pressure on the speaking.
After the break, the teams return to debating. Each side takes a turn answering the other side's arguments. Mr. LeBeau says teams can be divided so three students present the case and a different three students present the refutations.
With a large class, I'll have several debates running at the same time. I'll direct traffic with a stopwatch and say, okay, time's up, so next it's the other team's turn. We can manage a large class that way.
Traditional debate, as we described in our previous article, includes several cycles of presentation and refutation. For English learners, one cycle of presentation and refutation is usually enough practice.
Just having each team present their case and present their refutations is sufficient and usually a lot of fun, and everybody feels that they have accomplished something. I always tell them everyone's a winner. We've all done a good job.
Mr. LeBeau says sometimes he asks the rest of the class to vote on which side won. Asking for audience feedback gives the lesson a good ending. But he says additional discussion depends on the situation and the level of the students. Next week, in part 3 of Successful Debate, we will explain the reasons for learning to debate in business as well as in the academic world. We learn how debating gives students a better understanding of Western culture and lets students practice critical thinking. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.